1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. This is Your Turn, a live call-in show featuring spirited discussion and debate about issues that matter to the community. Your Turn is sponsored by People's First Community Bank, the best bank in the neighborhood. Stay with us to hear what Northwest Florida thinks. Better yet, call in at 623-1330 and tell us what you think. It's your turn here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. Now, here's the host of Your Turn.
We have a half hour left of this version of Your Turn, the program I've dubbed Meeting Nonsense with Common Sense. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom. If you happen to miss out on any of the previous interviews in this segment of Your Turn, please sign on to our website at www.cfif.org. Sign up for our free Lunchtime Liberty update, where you can get into your mailbox every Friday audio versions of some of these interviews that we conduct. So you can go back and listen to the ones that you missed, or listen to them again if you want to just replay one of them over again, as you may want to do with my next one. We're going to be talking about immigration and the issue of sanctuary city, something I didn't know anything about until I started researching this issue. I'm joined on the phone by Bill Otis. He's the Director of Legal Affairs for the American Civil Rights Union. You can pull up their website if you're sitting at the computer by going to www.theacru.org. Don't confuse them with the American Civil Liberties Union, although they do want to know what the ACLU is doing in your community. Up on their website, one of the first things they ask is, what is the ACLU doing in your community? Threatening your school board? Yeah, sometimes. Upsetting your high school graduation ceremonies by denying a prayer? We won't let them. Forbidding the expression of Christmas or other holidays? Let's hope not. Bill is joining us this afternoon to talk about the issue of sanctuary cities as it relates to immigration reform. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me on the program.
What is a sanctuary city?
A sanctuary city is one in which the mayor or the city council has directed a police force not to inquire into the immigration status of immigrants they may run across in their daily work, in traffic stops or in being called to a domestic dispute. Now, of course, when the police are forbidden to ask about immigration status, what that means is that illegal immigrants who come to that city know that they're going to skate by because the police have been instructed to turn the other way, not to pay attention to the law that governs the entry of aliens or immigrants into this country. So, of course, sanctuary cities are a magnet for illegal immigrants. That's what a sanctuary city is.
Where are some of them?
Well, unfortunately, they're all over the place. They're springing up from East Coast to West Coast. For example, New Haven, Connecticut, the seat of Yale University, is a sanctuary city. The oldest and largest sanctuary city is Los Angeles, which has been a sanctuary city for almost 30 years, but now something may be getting done about it because a lawsuit is in preparation to challenge the standing order to the police force in Los Angeles not to ask about immigration status, and perhaps similar lawsuits will be filed against the city fathers and other of these immigration cities. So the answer is there are any number of them. On the other hand, there are some cities that are taking a very different view. For example, Hazleton, Pennsylvania, which has adopted an ordinance requiring that landlords not rent to illegal aliens, that requires that employers not hire illegal aliens. So those jobs and those apartments or homes will be reserved for people, both citizens and aliens, who obeyed the rules, who stood in line and obeyed the law and are here legally. And those people we welcome. So there are sanctuary cities, and there are cities that take a very different point of view.
Now, when you talk about Hazleton, Pennsylvania, you have up on your website something called the Hazleton Rebellion. But now Hazleton is coming under attack, aren't they, for taking this strong stand in support of immigration reform or against, you know, illegal immigrants moving in, renting places, taking jobs. What's happening to them now from, sort of the rebellion
that
you talk about?
They are indeed under attack. As a matter of fact, the ACLU is behind a lawsuit which is challenging the regulations in Hazleton that forbid employers from hiring illegal immigrants and forbid landlords from renting to them on the grounds that this is unfair discrimination. Well, of course, everybody is opposed to unfair discrimination, and it's unfair discrimination to put people at a disadvantage for things that they can't control. Obviously, you know, discriminating people on the basis of their race, color, or sex, of course, that's unfair discrimination, but it is not unfair discrimination to treat people differently based on whether they obey the law.
Right.
I mean, I take it that this country is founded on respect for the rule of law, and when all the city fathers in Hazleton are doing are treating people differently based on whether they're in compliance with the law or whether they're defying the law, well, that's not unfair discrimination. That's the kind of discrimination we are before.
I am not talking to David Letterman. No, I'm talking to William Otis, but I am going to ask him to give us the top five reasons why we should oppose sanctuary cities. And actually, I think you just gave us reason number five. You said because sanctuary cities, or your blog indicates, because sanctuary cities facilitate and encourage illegal immigration. They are unfair to legal immigrants who waited in line, followed the rules, and showed respect for the law. So that's your number five reason why we should oppose sanctuary cities. Can you walk us through the other four that you put?
Well, the other reasons, and I think you're pointing there, and let me remind your listeners again, as I'm grateful that you did, that you can find that particular entry of mine on the ACRU blog site. But I'll be happy to go through them. Sanctuary cities are a bad idea. In addition, because of what they do to people who are here legally, not just legal immigrants, but our citizens who are denied jobs and who have to pay taxpayer dollars in direct costs for things like police and prison services, for education, for hospital services, those dollars should be going for the benefit of the people who are here legally and pay those dollars rather than for the benefit of the people who shouldn't be here at all. In addition, illegal immigration puts our policemen at risk. There was an astonishing article a couple of weeks ago in the Los Angeles Times that talked about a survey that was done, two or three years ago, by the Government Accountability Office. That's an office of the federal government. And they surveyed over 55,000 illegal immigrants who were in state, local, or federal custody. And they found something that I think your listeners will think is just amazing and appalling. What this study found was that half of these illegal immigrants had been arrested an average of 8 times before.
Wow.
That half of them had been arrested for felonies, that 20% of them were in jail for drug crimes, and many were in jail for violent crimes. And yet, here they still are, in the United States, absorbing prison space. So that endangers our police officers, and that's one of the reasons that some of the police in Los Angeles are joining this lawsuit that is being prepared to avoid and put an end to this revolving door of illegal immigrants being arrested, and then they come right back out on the street where the police have to deal with them again. And, of course, it's not just our police officers. One of the other reasons is that they endanger our citizens. Of course, for every crime that is committed by an illegal immigrant, there is a crime victim behind that crime. There's a human face and a human cost to allowing this illegal immigration to go on and to not removing people who ought not to be in the United States to begin with. And the primary reason that you may see in the blog that I wrote for opposing sanctuary cities and the illegal immigration that they attract is that it promotes disrespect for the rule of law. To my way of thinking, it's extremely unfortunate that the city fathers, that is the mayor and the city councils in these sanctuary cities, are telling the police, the very people who we trust to enforce the law, hey, you have to look the other way. Not only don't enforce the law, be deliberately and willfully blind to what the law requires. What are our kids going to think? What are junior high school kids or high school kids, for that matter, what should adults think when our leaders, when our elected leaders tell the police to turn a blind eye to violation of law? If that doesn't promote disrespect for law and for the very notion of the rule of law, it's just hard to think of what would.
Well, let me bring this a little closer to home, because I know, you know, our elected leaders, at least to my knowledge, we are not a sanctuary city. We're not a sanctuary county. I can't imagine we ever would be. But it's quite interesting, because just this past weekend, I was having a conversation with one of our local judges about whether or not he had seen, there was a column that was written two or three, maybe a month or so ago, about an increase in crime in our area, particularly post-hurricane. We were hit real hard by Ivan and then by Dennis. And, you know, it brought in some day laborers, and it may have raised the number of illegal immigrants in our area. And I was asking him, you know, as this column seemed to indicate that, you know, some of the increase in crime, the overcrowding that we have in our jails, and that's certainly a daily problem here where we live, maybe the result of an increase in illegal immigrants. And I was asking him to confirm, have you seen that in your courtroom? And it was interesting. His answer, first of all, confirmed, yes, it has been. But he said the second part, which I found even more interesting, particularly in light of what you talk about with respect to sanctuary cities, is he said, but you know, it doesn't do me a whole lot of good to even ask the question whether or not they're here legally or illegally, because when I've asked the question and learned, you know, well, can I see your driver's license? Something as simple as that to verify their name. And then they say, well, I don't have one. And then you delve further and say, well, why don't you have one? And then they eventually get to, well, I'm here illegally. You call the authorities, and he's talking, I assume, the federal authorities, and they say, okay, so what? What are you going to do about it? So even if your local legislative officials haven't formally, quote, adopted you as a sanctuary city, it almost seems like your hands are tied even at a broader level, at the federal level, if the immigration officials are going to tell you, so what, nothing we can do about it.
It's extremely unfortunate. We as taxpayers and as citizens have a right to expect better from the people we elect. And, you know, sometimes you'll hear, well, you know, we can't deport all 12 million illegal immigrants in this country. And to be perfectly honest, it would be quite a job to deport 12 million illegal immigrants. But that's not to say we can't do anything. We can certainly deport illegal immigrants like those that I mentioned in the Los Angeles Times article that surveyed this Government Accountability Office report. We can certainly deport illegal immigrants when they are arrested again and again.
Yeah, the repeat offenders.
Well, you're not to deport 12 million people. Let's just deport the criminals and start with that and see where we go from there.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking there 55,000. You said the GAO office found that 55,000 illegal immigrants incarcerated in federal, state, and local facilities. Let's start with those 55,000.
No, it's just astonishing. When we have a report now, as I say, this report is 2 or 3 years old. This is not something that landed on the federal government's desk, you know, this morning. This is something that has been known about for years. I just can't imagine an excuse for not enforcing the law. My own background was that I was a federal prosecutor for a long time, for many years. And if my boss in the Department of Justice had sent out a directive, well, you know, just look the other way when you see something that's a violation of law, I would have quit, because then your job doesn't mean anything.
Right.
And I think that the same attitude of devotion, not even devotion to the rule of law, but just ordinary attention and ordinary fidelity to the rule of law would require our federal authorities working with our state authorities, as they do all the time, for example, in drug enforcement, to work with those state authorities to just start remedying this problem by removing the illegal immigrants, the thousands of illegal immigrants who have made crime victims of our citizens and of legal immigrants. Those people, those illegal immigrants plainly need to be out of this country, and our elected leaders need to start getting them out.
Mr. Otis, it's interesting that, and I just want to put a footnote in here, when you said, you know, if my boss had said to me X, Y, or Z, I would quit. And probably some of the listeners out there are saying, you know, yeah, right, you would. Well, let me back up, because I found an interesting bio about our guest right now, Mr. Otis at Sodes. Bill Otis is a graduate of the University of North Carolina and Stanford Law School. For almost 20 years, he was the head of the appellate division of the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Virginia. In that capacity, he argued more than 100 cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. And here's where I think he becomes true to his word. He resigned from the Department of Justice in 1999 when it declined to seek the admission of an unmirandized but voluntary statement by a bank robbery defendant. That's really amazing that you held to your standards and your morals. Interestingly as well, the next year he became an informal policy advisor on criminal justice issues to the campaign of then Governor George Bush. And you were appointed counselor to the head of the Drug Enforcement Administration. You previously served Mr. Bush's father, George H.W. Bush, as special White House counsel in 1992. That's Mr. William Otis. That's who we are talking to. He is with the ACRU. That's the organization, the American Civil Rights Union. The ACRU.org is their website. I need to take a very quick break. And when we come back from the break, I want to ask you, Mr. Otis, what it is that we average American citizens can do to fight back against these types of policies like the sanctuary cities. Can you stay with us through this short break?
Be happy to come back.
Okay. We're going to have about 5 minutes when we come back. So if you have a question for Mr. Otis, please start dialing right now. We'll be right back after this short break.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
All right, we've got about 6 minutes left with Mr. Otis. He's the Director of Legal Affairs for the American Civil Rights Union, and their website address is www.theacru.org. You can pull up the website and learn more about what we're talking about, that is sanctuary cities. During the break, I got a call from Mark, and he asked me to ask you two different questions, Mr. Otis, so I'm going to go ahead and do that before I get to my question about what can and should we do as average American citizens to fight back against these sanctuary city policies. But Mark indicated that Tom Tancredo, I think he's from New Mexico, if I'm right.
I think he's from Colorado.
Colorado. Okay, thank you for correcting me. That he is running for president, and he said that there is a federal law that prohibits sanctuary cities. Are you aware of that? Did I misunderstand the question?
That is not my understanding of it. What is insidious about these sanctuary cities is that it is not so much a direct violation of federal law as it is a circumvention of federal law. Now, at the bottom of it, there is the same degree of unhealthy and unwholesome disrespect for the rule of law. Of course there is a federal law that forbids illegal immigrants from being in the country. That's what it means to be an illegal immigrant. But there is, to my knowledge, no federal law that requires local police to report that. Whether the local police can do that, of course, is a matter of local concern. And that actually plugs back into the question that you have in mind, which is what people can do. They need to start with their local elected leaders to ensure that policemen are not given an order to turn their back on the law and instead have a reaction more like the reaction that is going on in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, which is, well, we're interested in whether you're in the country legally. If you are, welcome. We want you here. You know, America is a land of legal immigrants, and we welcome people like that, as we always have. But if you're here illegally, goodbye.
Let me ask you this. Mark also brought this up. He said in El Salvador, he thinks that we have an agreement with El Salvador that if we do send back someone who's been incarcerated here or arrested here, that they will, in fact, incarcerate them in El Salvador. Do you know if that's true?
I don't know directly if that's true, but I do know that something similar is true. When I was in the Department of Justice, one of my jobs early on was to help implement what are called prisoner transfer treaties. Prisoner transfer treaties are agreements between the United States and another nation that nationals of that other nation who are convicted and incarcerated in the United States for violation of the United States law can be transferred back for imprisonment in their own countries. And it would not surprise me a bit if that same kind of thing were going on with El Salvador.
I gotcha. Okay, one more question, Bill. We've got about a minute left. It's your turn.
Yeah, the rule of law, isn't that almost an oxymoron when we're dealing with illegal immigration?
Unfortunately, it's well on the way to becoming an oxymoron because the rule of law presupposes some fidelity to what the legislature enacts. Why do we have rules that govern entry into this country by immigrants if we're not planning on enforcing them? I mean, it's just a mystery to me, so I think you're onto something there.
Yeah, and one other thing. I'm speaking for myself and, you know, John Q. Public. If I'm stopped for an infraction, a motor vehicle infraction, we'll say, and I don't produce a valid driver's license and proof of insurance, I stand a chance of going to jail, correct?
You should.
Yeah, okay.
The chance of that,
yeah.
Sure.
But an illegal immigrant, if he's stopped, he has no driver's license, no ID, no anything, they let him go.
It's most curious, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Someone like that who gets stopped, it seems to me, should go to jail not just for the local infraction of driving without a license.
Correct.
But then the police officer ought to call his counterpart in the federal government and say, well, we've got someone here who needs a trip back across the border.
Right.
But that in a sanctuary city, that can't happen.
Wow. All right, well, thank you, and thank you, Bill, for your call again. We greatly appreciate it. And Mr. Otis, thank you so much for your time. Again, we've been talking with Bill Otis. He's the Director of Legal Affairs for the American Civil Rights Union. To learn more about sanctuary cities, how you can fight back, how we can start our own Hazleton Rebellion, please visit their website at www.theacru.org. I'm signing off for today. I'll be with you 2 weeks from tomorrow. Thanks so much for tuning in.